Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension beef educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we will be taking a break from our usual format of discussing Beef Watch newsletter articles. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by Dr. Danny Kleinfelter, who's a retired extension economist and professor with Texas A&M University. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Kleinfelter.
You're welcome.
Dr. Kleinfelter, during your tenure at Texas A&M University, you started and coordinated the Executive Program for Agricultural Producers. Please share with our listeners a little more about the program and the focus of it.
Well, let me start just a little bit with how I got going. I had worked for the Farm Credit System during the farm financial crisis, and I noticed that during that time, people who survived and even were doing reasonably well were those that were of a continuous improvement, better managers. And so when I got back to A&M, I wanted to start a program kind of like the business school executive development programs, except aimed at commercial farmers and ranchers. And when I started off, I found that it was a little harder than I thought. I went to all the nonprofit organizations, the government agencies, and they said, "You're trying to start a program the public thinks is take for a group of farmers taking over agriculture, and we can't touch it." Politics got into it. So I said, "Oh, great." When I went back and I went to six industry segments and picked the two leading firms in each of those industries and wrote them. And I told them, "I will take the first one that responds," and it was full within 3 weeks with funding. Then the next step, extension at that time was very state bounded, Nebraska to Nebraska, Texas to Texas, Illinois, Illinois. And I wanted to do this nationwide, actually throughout North America. And that caused, I had to write every extension director in every state, get permission to send Texas and Illinois into their state. Well, that was fine because they all said, "Fine with us. If it worked, maybe we'll try it." And then the other was locally, I had a little pushback because of the 16 faculty, 15 of them didn't come from Texas A&M. They were private sector consultants. They were leading academics, extension types, and from other states like Mike Bolger from Purdue, Neil Harrell from Iowa State, Dave Cole. And that took a little. And then the other was, this was 2 weeks long, 1 week 1 year, 1 week the next. And the fee covered the cost of the location, the room, the meals, the breaks, everything else. And so it was obviously considerably more expensive than most extension programs were. But we got started, had a limit of 60 people in the class. It was going to be a two-class program, 1 year one week, 1 year one week the next. And the first year, we had 55 people. Second year, we filled with 60, and 85% of the 55 that started off took it the second year. And since that time, the program has been oversubscribed every year it's been going on. Now, about 2000, we increased enrollment to 90 people per class because we were getting way too many and we weren't able to take them. And we put those who applied the year before ahead of the line. As long as they go ahead and pay prior to a deadline, they got first come, first serve. The whole point of this program is business management. It's not about production. It's not about marketing strategies or anything, how to use futures and options or anything. It deals with things like macroeconomic and global geopolitics impact on firm level decision making, personnel management, financial management, strategic thinking, strategic management, not just strategic planning. We also had family business management and a number of topics. We'd spend at least a half a day on each topic. What had happened when I'd gone out to extension right after I got back from the Farm Credit System and came to A&M, I go to these programs and I do about an hour and a half program, and then that was it. So I couldn't get any depth on any subject or fully develop it. And it seemed to me that about 90% of the people in the sessions didn't go home and do anything differently than they were doing before. So I wanted a group of people who were avid learners and were going to not take just verbatim what the faculty said, would discuss it among themselves and would at least consider it and work at getting better. And that's what the program's done. Each year I met with each class at the end of the session, ask them what I change, new topics, should I get rid of a faculty member, should I give one of them feedback. The idea is if you aren't meeting the needs of your market, book it in the last. And it's been successful. About 2 years ago, I turned it over to Mark Welsh when I got ready to retire, because the university about 3 years ago trademarked the program and said, you're going to pick your successor from our faculty. And Mark's done a good job.
Share a little about the characteristics of people who participate in the program. What's kind of a profile in terms of what they look like?
Well, they're very inquisitive people, for one thing. They aren't of any commodity type. I've had a guy raising alligators and chicken houses. I've had cotton producers, potato producers, corn, soybeans, beef, cow-calf operations, confinement hogs. There's no limit. It's all about business, and they understand that. It has nothing to do with how I can do a better job growing corn, how to do a better job producing more pounds of meat per cow. About half the benefit of the program comes from them talking to each other. They're people who are usually those, not just, they're good size typically because they're successful businesses. And that if you're successful, you tend to grow faster than others. But they're in an environment where they can open up and talk about things that they probably wouldn't talk about at home because they're afraid, you know, local jealousies and also, oh, just other things that this way they find, you know, their targets at home oftentimes, you know. And these guys are all in that same boat. And so they, after just a couple of days, they start breaking down, sharing things. We have roundtables in the evening. We have discussion groups where people put on a bullet board, is anybody here dealing with this problem? And if they do, they put a time and a location during one of the breaks where they're going to meet. And they show up and sit down, just whoever wants to come. We've had one group as small as 6 and one as big as 50 show up on topics. And they can deal with an issue that they have personally. In the evenings, the only thing about the roundtable is still the faculty members on the daytime, but it's not a continued teaching session. It's a chance for them to ask questions on something he or she raised during the day or something they didn't talk about that they wanted to know about in that area. The only other requirement is that anything anybody says, anybody else in the group can comment on. So if somebody else has some experience or ideas, they can throw those out too. And then we have, each evening, we have a hospitality room. People will go up there and sit around and just discuss. And they'll stay there till, usually what has to happen is the host of the room has to run people off because they, you know, they've got to get a little sleep.
So as you've worked with producers who've been part of the TPAP program, what are some things that you see that are different that they do than most other producers?
Well, they're continuous learners. One of the things, this is a little quote, but it's one thing. It says, it's an economic reality that for you and your business to succeed and continue successfully beyond you, your manager must learn, adapt, and continuously improve at the rate set by the leading edge of your competition and not by your comfort zone. Otherwise, you're falling behind even if you're moving ahead. And I use some examples in my classes and things like that to make that point a little more obvious. It's easier to relate to, but it's still, this thing, anytime one of these guys hears somebody say, well, that's the way we've always done things. They know they have a competitive advantage over them.
People who are involved in this program are lifelong learners. They're inquisitive, hungry to learn, and look for new opportunities. Is that pretty accurate?
Yes. Yep. It hits it right on the head.
What are some other things you see that they do in their businesses that set them apart from maybe an average production agricultural business?
Okay, well, let me give you a list of things, and I'll try to be real brief about each of them. One thing I've noticed, these guys are more strategic managers than just producers. And let me give you a definition of strategic manager. It's somebody who anticipates, adapts to, innovates and capitalizes on change. So these guys are more looking out front, several steps up the value chain, looking at how the global economy is changing, how consumer preferences are changing. And they're trying to move, because the guy that sees where the opportunities are before the general crowd does is going to be one step ahead of them. So that's one part. More and more of them have moved to more sophisticated accounting systems, you know, they're using accrual adjusted income and figuring out what their earned net worth is, not just their market value net worth. There's more monitoring and there's more cost accounting, first of all. And then there's more monitoring and analysis of business throughout the year. A lot of people prepare a cash flow statement for the lender, give it to him, and then, you know, toward the end of the year, they look back at how they're doing for tax purposes. These guys will take their cash flow statement and every month look at what's happened versus what I planned so that they can spot opportunities early on to jump on them, because everybody has 20/20 hindsight, but by the time we know it, 6 months past, these guys are trying to move quicker. The other thing is they're also, by doing that, spot problems sooner so they can address them before they get too big. The other thing I've seen them do is more contingency planning, that is what-if analysis. You know, here's what we think is going to happen. Now, what could happen based on a previous experience or what I've been reading and other things? If that happened, the big thing is, what would I do? What's going to be my strategy for dealing so that I'm not dealing out of panic when it occurs? I've thought about the most likely things that might occur and how my plan would be to deal with. Much better communications with employees and the management team. This isn't just a boss out there sending people out to do different jobs. There's more meetings, more communications. I don't know, you probably have heard of, but a guy named Peter Drucker is known as the father of modern management. He died a few years ago, but he was an old Austrian, and if he talked, there was real gravelly and stuff. He wouldn't have been a public speaker. But you could put him in a room, and the CEO of General Motors, of Ford, of every big bank of the country, Shell Oil and stuff, would be sitting there on their, you know, edge of their seats, listening to every word this guy said. One of the things he says is that 60% of all management problems are communication problems. That is, people don't know what they're expected to do. They're not told if they need to do something differently. Where is it we're trying to go with this thing? And that's one thing. So I guess you just have to say they're more leaders than they are bosses. And then the other thing that's picked up the last few years, it's been longer than that, but it's become more obvious, is human resource or personnel management. Having the right people on board. I don't know, you remember the book Good to Great by Jim Collins?
Yes.
One of the things he said is the best companies get the right people on the bus, in the right seats, and the wrong people off the bus. What that means is they're careful about their selection process. Once they get on board, they see where their talents are and put them in a job that fits their talents. And if they got a problem, they get rid of them. They don't let them sit there and become a poison or a bad apple and spoil low batch. And I think it's things like that. There's a lot of others I could come up with, but I'll tell you one of the ones I end with is what I call debriefings. I picked this up and used it when I was at the Farm Credit System, but I heard a lead pilot for the Blue Angels say, when they get done with every performance, they sit down and they brutally and honestly talk about what going, because he said if two planes are coming to each other at 600 miles an hour and you make a little mistake, you kill two pilots, blow up $30 million worth of airplanes, and probably kill a bunch of onlookers. So we've got to decide, what do we do wrong, what do we do better? That's the things about debriefing, learning. It's what did you learn when we look at what happened, why we did it, if it didn't work out like we thought it was going to, what should we have done different? So that every step of the way, we're trying to get better.
I think one of the things I've observed as you've shared some of these principles is these are principles that apply to any business. That's just not an ag business. It's any business. And I think
that's true.
I think what's unique about your program is it's geared towards primarily ag producers, but the principles are business principles.
Yes. In fact, as we have our sponsors like John Deere and Farm Credit System, others like that, have sent some of their people to the program too. We will allow 10% of non-producers to be in the program because we think there's some advantage to them learning what the producer, this kind of producer, is looking for. And also the producers get some benefit of getting some insight into the mindset from that side. So, but it's a producer-driven program, and 95, 96% of people in it have been producers. Now, the one thing that has happened over the last few years, the audience has gotten younger and more diverse, more men, more women. But a lot of it has been people who are next generation managers or maybe are the successors to the current management team. And they're taking them after they've been back in the business 5 years or so and have demonstrated, hey, this guy or woman has a potential to take on more in this business and be more. We're going to send them down. They'll not only get to hear the content, but they'll get to interact with a bunch of producers, and that they'll probably learn as much from as they will the faculty.
You mentioned some of the, or a lot of the people participating now tend to be younger than maybe they were 10, 15 years ago. For folks who are wanting to get started and gain some skills and develop their toolbox, so to speak, to be effective, what are some things that you would recommend that they should consider or look to grow in?
Okay, now there's a couple of things. There's one, if you are already are a farmer, you're out there, you're in business or you're a rancher, or if you're looking at one of your kids coming back to the farm. One thing I'd say, if you've got kids coming back to the farm or they want to, I'd encourage them to go to college and major in like agribusiness, where they can also take courses in business school, courses in different areas in production economics, like cattle operation or agronomy, other things, even engineering. Some of those courses were, with all the technologies coming online, they're a little better prepared for. And then that they go to work somewhere else for about minimum of 3 and up to 5 years before they come back to the farm. And I think one of the things, besides working elsewhere, they need to earn one real promotion. By that I mean not just a title change, but they've done well enough to move up responsibilities, because they'll see how other businesses operate. Now, for the farmer himself, that's, hey, look, I'm already in this thing, I'd suggest programs like TPAP. I think, in fact, I think it's a better idea not to just come preach to a school and get sent down to this program. I think you need some management experience, and you need to suffer some of the consequences of your own decisions before you get a lot out of this. You need to be able to understand what and relate to something. The other is, I'd probably pick at least one, well, I'd probably go to at least two programs a year. One, the best business-oriented program in your commodity area. You know, there's commodity groups have their own programs and others, but there's some that get known as being more cutting edge and things like that. I'd go to that. Then I'd pick either one of the top general business programs, like Top Producer Conference, the DTN's Management Conference, Farm Futures. The other I'd see is, I've seen some, as they've done that, also go to some of the business school programs. Or, like when I was doing this, I'd go to the Inc. Magazine Rapidly Growing Company Conference. I don't even know if that's still offered anymore. And there wouldn't be over two of us out of 600 people there that were ag people. But I thought, these are very innovative, driven companies. What are they doing differently? Because a lot of the really best ideas in agriculture come from outside of agriculture. We just haven't applied them yet. The other thing I do is I would look around real hard and become a member of a peer advisory group. It doesn't have to be all other ag people, but what this is a group of people, maybe let's say 6 to 10, of really top managers that get together and use each other as sounding boards, you know, having them help you do your due diligence, getting a different set of experienced eyes looking at your situation and giving you honest feedback. And also benchmark yourself again, learn best practices from what others are doing. Somebody else has tried this. If you want to try something and you don't have any experience, maybe somebody else has, and you can learn. You don't have to start from scratch. If you're looking for some expertise in some area, each of these guys or women have a network of contacts. You can draw on their network of contacts too, but that's a way to continuously learn. And they don't have any governing responsibility over you, nor do they have any fiduciary liability, because they aren't the ones making you do it. But one thing is good, is if you make a commitment in front of a group of peers you really respect, you're more likely to do it. Because a lot of problems is, a lot of farmers know what they should do, but they turn around and do what they've always done, or do what they like to, do what they know how to do, and they end up spending most of the time fighting fires. It's a little different in this environment.
I really appreciate that comment. I think some of what you shared is really, it's about getting outside of where you're comfortable, getting outside of what you're used to, just going and seeing other things, seeing other places. And I think one of the challenges for a lot of producers in agriculture is, and I understand this, is they like the production side. That's really what they enjoy. And so this area of focus is a little outside of maybe their comfort zone. Ag producers tend to be a little more introverted in their type. And so this is a stretch. And but also I think it's where the opportunity lies.
Somebody that sees an opportunity before the rest of the crowd and can take advantage of it has a couple of steps ahead of them. So you can learn an awful lot from people in other types of agriculture, different parts of the country that might be applied to your operation.
Well, anything else you'd like to add, Dr. Kleinfelder, as we point towards wrapping up?
There's a lot of things we could go on into many areas and other things. But I think that I don't mean to demean production at all. Production is a critical part of the business, but it's just one part. People management, financial management, marketing, value added, coordinating with like having collaborative farming arrangements, strategic alliances, benchmarking against other people are things people are going to have to start to do. We're going to move more toward real-time information, more technology all the time. And I think one thing we'll see in agriculture are more coordinated supply chains with qualified suppliers. There's one industry I know that 50 years ago had 1,000 growers. They have 70 today. And what they did is every time somebody didn't perform and they yank a contract from them, they give it to the best who they had. Or if they had a new opportunity come up, we can go out and say, well, here's the farmer. Let's go to the best of who we have and see if they'll take it on. Because it's easier. We know what we're getting. We're getting top-notch producers, people that communicate with us, people we've seen prove themselves before. And it's just kind of a constant culling process. It's happening in agriculture, too. What's a big farm, for example? And I'm using farm rather than ranch in this case. Doubles about every 10 years. In graduate school, a 2,500-acre farm would have been a big farm in Illinois. 10 years later, it would have been 5,000. I had a call from one of the magazines, Wall Street Journal, I think, and they were asking me, how many 10,000-acre farms are there in Illinois? And I said, probably not over 10, 20 maybe. Now, if they'd waited and asked me that 10 years later and said, how many 20,000-acre farms are there in Illinois? I'd say, 10, 20. It just seems like that group grows about doubles in size. And that's one point I would make. Always get better before you get bigger.
I guess just thinking about that a little bit, where do you see opportunities for folks who are wanting to get launched? I mean, you look at the capital required to enter into production agriculture today, it's large amounts. So for folks who are wanting to look for opportunities, where do you see those in this kind of environment?
Well, there are a lot of operations that are well managed that don't really have an obvious successor. Maybe they got somebody that's a really good producer that's one of their sons or daughters or whatever. There's some opportunities to go into existing businesses that are well run, well capitalized, with the opportunity to potentially grow up into management or grow into a, and I think this at some point would be a good discussion, into the ownership of the operation. Also, a bunch of medium-sized farms that want to get bigger or want to get better. These collaborative farming operations. I've had a lot of guys in DPAP that have, there's four or five farms that are maybe 2,000 to 5,000 acres go together. They have a CFO, a marketing specialist, somebody else who becomes kind of the agronomist among the group. They can afford to hire expertise they wouldn't have otherwise. But they have market power, the ability to afford expertise and to be a bigger player in the marketplace, to at least not just to be big, but to get discounts, to get opportunities to markets that other people wouldn't have.
Well, I really appreciate you for joining me today, Dr. Kleinfelder.
You're welcome.
So I'd encourage you, for more information about the executive program for agriculture producers, visit the website. I also would mention that there are a number of videos online with Dr. Kleinfelder outlining principles that are taught in the TPAP program.